Quiero.
Welcome, folks. Y'all come on in and make yourself at home. This here? Well, this is the Rolling Thunder Podcast, your home for all things Rolling Thunder. This episode of the Rolling Thunder Podcast is presented by Mossy Oak Camouflage, because everything is better in Bottomland. And Lucky Duck Premium Decoys, masters of deception.
Welcome to another episode of the Rolling Thunder Podcast. I am joined via conference call by a couple of my favorite people in the industry. When I go to trade shows and places where industry folk hang out, this the couple of guys on the other end are like some of my favorite people to find and eat dinner with. And, I mean, when I think about Ricky Hart, Brett, I cannot think of somebody else that I would rather go to Fremont Street with than Ricky. With Ricky Hart, you hadn't really been to Fremont Street. I just, y'all are a couple of my favorites, and I am really glad that you're joining us on the podcast today. That was a weird, awkward introduction to tell you that on the other end of the line, I have Ricky Hart and Brett Ayers, who both work for Lucky Duck Premium Decoys. How are y'all today?
Doing well, thank you.
Well, Spencer, thanks for having us.
No problem. Tell us, where do you guys live? Y'all both work remotely, and kind of give me a job description of what you do for Lucky Duck. You can go first, Ricky.
All right, thanks. So I currently reside in a small town in Michigan by the name of Sturgis, Michigan. You're right, I do work remotely. Used to traveling a lot, but right now, given the situation, I'm not traveling at all. But been working with Lucky Duck here for 6 years as a sales manager. So my primary responsibility is overseeing all sales functions, working with big box retailers, all the way down to working with Haley and Luke and as far as on the website goes and managing all that. So with us being a small company, we all work closely together. I like to think that I can help Brett out on product development. He leans on me. I lean on him for other things. He helps on the sales side of things. So it's kind of all hands on deck when it comes to Lucky Duck, and what we're all focused on is company first. And by that, we'll all win. So it's really a good synergy, and it's a great team to be a part of.
Awesome. And Brett, what's your role? Where you live? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm like Ricky. I work remotely. I live in West Central Ohio. I'm literally about 10 minutes from the Indiana border, the center of the state. And my role with Lucky Duck, I am the product design manager. So I pretty much oversee on a daily basis all the projects that we have rolling through, new, existing, and, improvements, whatnot. So deal a lot with our manufacturers on a daily basis, and like Ricky mentioned, he's only a couple hours away from me, so there's times I'll get on the road and take my laptop and some products up there, and we'll go over stuff. And then obviously I talk to Tim Noe, the owner of Lucky Duck, on a daily basis, and just making sure things are rolling.
Yeah, what's it like to live in the north? Are y'all still like freezing cold up there, or are y'all wearing?
No way. No, man, it's today it's going to get in the mid-60s. I think Brett's sometimes a little bit warmer than me, but relative. But we're turkey hunting just like you right now. So it's not too bad. Now, if you get up by where the office is at, it's a little bit colder and the winter's longer.
Gotcha. You're not turkey hunting just like me, Ricky. Let's be honest. I mean, you're for one thing, wearing a jacket probably. Mornings, and you're not killing nearly as many turkeys as I'm killing right now, Ricky.
Well, you know, you're right. I've only seen three die and since Saturday, and that's when the season started. So you're right. I'm not crawling on the ground playing with snakes and all that stuff. We do have ticks, but we don't play with snakes down here. So yeah, or up here, I think. So we're all good. We're all good.
I'm busting your chops. I have not seen one die since last Tuesday. So it's been 9 days, but I've actually been working. And, that's probably better for my family anyways. Well, kind of, if you don't mind, Ricky, will you kind of give me a little bit of a history of Lucky Duck and maybe even a synopsis of kind of who's the team and, you know, y'all are kind of a, like you said, a family, and one of the things I admire most about the organization that you guys have built and that Tim is running is when y'all are out and about at shows and, you know, y'all are a team, and I really like that about you guys, and the company first mentality is obvious just in the way that you guys conduct yourself, and I interact with a bunch of different sponsor level kind of companies, and none of them have the kind of teamwork and team mentality that you guys have at Lucky Duck. So take a minute and kind of tell me who's who and maybe a little bit of the history of Lucky Duck.
Yeah. So, Lucky Duck, you know, we started back in 1995. It was Edge. If everybody remembers kind of the, Turd Brown type box, believe it or not, our first product, was not the spinning wing decoy at that time. It was a goose magnet. But then in, kind of the 2012 era, Tim Noe and Jeff Hallbeck took over, and rebranded the company as Lucky Duck. So, you know, obviously with the spinning wing decoy being one of our more predominant products, we kind of centered it around the Lucky Duck theme. And it's, you know, we've grown it tremendously. When I first started, there was an office assistant in the office, myself, Tim, Jeff Hallbeck, and then we had just a shipping manager at that time. Now, fast forwarding 6 years, we've been able to hire Haley, and she runs pretty much our marketing. We've just recently brought on Luke Kramlett. He's going to be doing some community marketing and also helping me out on the sales side of things. We also obviously hired Brett. Brett, I think you've been with the company, a couple years now?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years this summer.
So, you know, Brett's been there for 2 years. And then, you know, we have Cheyenne. She's in shipping in the back. And then we have Rob, who's our shipping manager, and Jay Mall, who also is in shipping. But Jeff Hallbeck and Tim Noe are the owners. And, you know, the great thing about Lucky Duck is that we all lean on each other during the time of need. Like Brett says, he often comes up here and we go over a lot of things. You know, we actually consider each other a family. We often visit each other throughout the summer. So it's not always work. It's definitely, we definitely get to play hard too. So, you know, it's like one big family around here and we all challenge each other, sometimes more so than we should, but it builds a cohesive unit. And I think that, you know, our leadership in the owners, kind of has led, you know, paved the way, I should say, into building the team that we have and how effective that we are and how we communicate with our customers. And I also want to mention, I forgot about Tori in customer service. I mean, he's got one of the most grueling parts of the job where he has to talk with everybody and walk them through, you know, fixing decoys and e-callers and that type of thing. So it's, you know, our business has just grown tremendously, especially with the predator side. You know, now we're getting more with this, the dove side going in the spinning wing and the kennel, you know, to Brett's success. Brett was, engineer by trade, built that kennel and, you know, worked with, American based suppliers to, you know, build that kennel to be, you know, the best kennel on the market. So it's just been great. It's just great to see how far we've come, and how we've grown as a team. And I can't be more thankful. And quite honestly, it's a joy to come to work every day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Tim, give me a little bit of, Brett, give me a little bit of your background kind of, and, what you've done with the company and all that?
Yeah, so I've been in the outdoor industry for quite a long time now. I got started as a goose caller, traveling around the different shows with the likes of Fred Zink, Zink Outdoors, Zink Calls. So, you know, I got my, that's how I kind of got my foot in the door, and I just built a lot of relationships through that, attending shows, and then, you know.
You were one of those Avery Zink staffers that
I was actually an Avery employee at one time as well, so.
Really?
I worked for Avery. Yeah, I worked for Avery for a little while as a product designer, so, you know, just with my background and knowing the, you know, some of the softwares and, you know, yeah. So
I didn't,
but yeah,
no,
my goose calling.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I didn't know that. My office is like literally around the corner from Avery and, you know, everybody around here's earliest waterfowl and memories. We don't call it waterfowl. We call it duck hunting down here, but, you know, everybody would flock to the Avery Superstore on the days that Tony Vandermore and everybody turned in all their decoys. You can buy Avery decoys for cheap.
Yep.
But that's wild.
Yep. Yeah, do you remember the old crawfish boils?
Absolutely.
When DU would have their big show down in Memphis and Avery would have a big crawfish boil. I was at a couple of those.
That's good. That's wild.
But anyhow, yeah, so that's how, you know, that's how I kind of got my foot in the door. Just, you know, I've been waterfowl hunting my whole life and, you know, just I started doing some freelance photography, you know, when I was with Avery and then, actually not freelance, but I was doing photography for them. And then I continued doing some photography on my own. And, that's how I kind of got hooked up with Ricky. You know, I did some stuff for Lucky Duck. And Ricky and I just, you know, like he said, became really good friends. I went to his daughter Hudson's first birthday party. That was actually the first time I'd ever met Ricky face to face. He took a shot and said, "Hey, why don't you come on up here and we'll hang out?" And so, I drove my family up to Ricky's mom's place at the time and, had a good old time and celebrated his daughter's first birthday. And so yeah, just, you know, continued from there. And like Ricky mentioned, I have an engineering background. And so, yep, came on the Lucky Duck. I think through a conversation that Ricky had with, Tim, just, I had asked him one day, "Hey man, you know, if you know of anybody, I just wanted to get my foot back in the door in the industry. And if you know of anybody that's looking to hire, and, you know, just throw my name out there, give me a heads up." And next thing I know, I got a phone call from Tim Noe saying, started asking me a bunch of questions, and we had a little phone interview, and here I am.
It's awesome. One of the things I like and admire about Tim the most is Tim is like very quiet and reserved, but not scared. Like most people I know that are as bold and direct as Tim has the ability to be are just giant colossal turds. You know, like it's so hard to say, to be direct and be gentle and be kind. And, I wish I was more like Tim. He's really a great leader. And, that's a rabbit trail, I guess, but,
he's a great boss.
That's great. Yeah, I bet he's been a great partner for me for sure. So I guess the main reason, I mean, there's a bazillion reasons that I should have you guys on the podcast, but the main reason that I wanted to have you guys particularly on the podcast today is because, I mean, this is a big week for Lucky Duck. You guys are unveiling the new kennel doors. Y'all want to kind of give me a spiel on that?
Go ahead, Brett. Yeah, so, you know, when I got hired in at Lucky Duck, I had no idea, you know, some of the projects I was going to work on. And, one of my first tasks when I had my sit down meeting or phone calls, conference call with Tim, kind of going over the project list, he sent me an email with a long project list of things he wanted to work on. Dog Kennel was one of them. And so that was one of the first projects that, you know, that I worked on. So, you know, we did some research, you know, that what was out there, and, you know, we wanted to build a durable, lightweight, kennel that, you know, that could stand, withstand the test. And, so we came up with a good design, you know, what we thought was a sturdy design, and, you know, made the plunge into, doing all the tooling with, like Ricky mentioned, every component of this door is made in the U.S. So, or of the kennels made in the U.S. But, so once we started doing some testing, we found some things and, realized that we needed to do a little bit of updating. And so we just recently, as you mentioned, this week, released a new door that has some safety latches that, you know, that got our kennel to pass the Center of Pet Safety's 5-star crash rating. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, you should be. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. How many other kennels out there ask that?
There's one other company out there that has passed that. So
okay,
and we're, you know,
so that's
we're
not
proud.
That's not one of those. That's not one of those. Everybody's got a crash test rated kennel thing. Like that's a big deal.
Yeah. Yes, that's a big deal. It's pretty cool to achieve.
Yeah. So when. All right, so you started working on the kennel, what, I guess right after you got hired, about 2 years ago?
It'll be, I guess it was, I got hired in August, and I started talking to some manufacturers and started working on some design concept, talked to lots of different, you know, dog trainers, owners, you know, that are around pets every day, trying to get some feedback. You know, getting input from different folks and some online stores, et cetera, et cetera. And, it was September of 18 is when I started really, you know, putting the pencil to the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But, and then, you know, it took a little time. We went through a few design changes, you know, once it did go through the CAD software, you know, sending it out, getting people's, you know, thoughts. You know, trying to put it through some software to see what kind of test, you know, what kind of weight it could withstand and how sturdy it was going to be, you know, and it was looking really good through all that stuff. And like I said, that's when we made the jump to release for tooling and to go from there. So.
And So from an engineering standpoint, when you build something like this, did you build it in a solid state, like a CAD software, kind of a solid state model? Is that what you're working with?
Yep. So I work with a CAD software called SolidWorks. It's a 3D CAD software, and that's exactly where it started. It started with a square block on the screen, and through the process of, you know, different cuts and different features, we got to where we're at. So, you know, one of the big things that, you know, adds the strength to our kennel is, you know, it's a single wall kennel. A single wall is, you know, gonna make the weight of it lighter, right? So being a single wall, we wanted to make sure it had the durability that, you know, that it could withstand people standing on it and, you know, a rollover in a car wreck or whatever. And, so we, if you look at the kennel, there's some design features to it to add strength to that. You know, on our sides, there's some lobes and stuff that add strength to that single wall. So, you know, that was big on the, you know, on the design side of things. So also some of the features, you know, we got a couple drain holes, you know, that are in the back, and we got some channels along the sides and the belly of the kennel itself is raised off the floor, and then that bellies into those channels. So when you have a wet dog and he gets inside that kennel, that water sheds off into these channels, and then, you know, again, you can, you know, spray it out, clean it out easy, and the water, you know, goes out the drain holes out the back. So, but it's got a reversible door. it's got a reversible door. Very simple. You can reverse, you know, you can have a right hand, a left hand open door in a matter of 5 seconds. You know, it's got a locking stainless steel latch to it. And then again, like I said, the big thing, but we just added some, safety pins, and, that's what put us over to be a 5-star crash test rated kennel.
So when you submitted your kennel for crash test rating, I guess they give you feedback and you continue to improve. I mean, you modify your design if necessary, and the door obviously came up as they said you need to redo your door. You need to have that, like, walk me through that process.
Yeah. So, that's exactly what happened. You know, we had our door and put it through the testing, and, you know, everything's filmed, and was able to study the film to see what was happening during the process, which, I mean, that's a big plus, and, you know, was able to see where things needed to be improved. And we targeted that area and were able to make the necessary changes and, you know, have a, you know, the door before was great. But, you know, obviously now it's definitely a little better, and it just provides that extra safety for your dog.
So how does the conversation go when, all right, so at some point you submit for testing, you know that you got to redo something on the door, you redo the door, so now you've got a re-engineered door, you pass the testing. Obviously that was a big deal. Everybody's, you know, excited you passed the testing. Walk me through the conversation that I know that there had to have been a conference call or an email chain or something about we've got to manufacture a slightly different door with new pins. How did that conversation go from there to let's send everybody a new door for the kennel that they bought?
Yeah, so honestly, the changes to the door were not truly significant to where it was, you know, entirely different. Just added, we added some, a little bit of strength in some areas, and then obviously some places for the added pins. Yeah. So, you know, looking back at that cost, you know, looking at that whole thing and the conversation, you know, like we mentioned before, you know, Tim's a very understanding guy, and, you know, we had a goal in mind, and we wanted to achieve that goal, and, you know, that's what we did. So, the conversation wasn't bad, and, you know, just let's do what needs to be done to make this a good, strong, sturdy kennel and be 5-star crash test rated.
Yeah. You know, I think go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah, and to that point about it's almost like a customer satisfaction type guarantee, right? When we broke the kennel in the market, we knew of its capabilities and everything, and we were doing pilot lab testing and doing all this in the background, you know, for the last year, basically, while the kennel's in the market and people are using it and they're happy with it. And, you know, we've gotten great feedback and no returns at all on the kennel. But, you know, just to show from the mission side of things and Lucky Duck and how we operate and why it's so important in what we do in customer satisfaction is keeping our customers happy, not just in the spinning wing side, but also with this dog kennel. So we were dedicated to the customer and said, hey, we are going to make sure that your pet is protected to the best that we can do. So we're going to go ahead when we update this door, and we're just going to send you a new door, right? So we just, you know, we eat the cost of that in the shipping and everything, and we sent out the new doors. I work closely with the retailers, Kim, who's our office administrator. She's, you know, taking these orders in and making sure that we're getting new doors out to customers and that kind of stuff. So, you know, she had her hands full with that and myself as well. And then Haley was working with, you know, all of our ambassadors and such and people like that, making sure that they had updated doors. So it was no small task, but thankfully with a good team and the right people, we got that push forward. But again, I think it goes back to
just where we stand with our customer and the lifetime guarantee that we're providing with the kennel.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear you say, and I'm going to say it for you a different way. But so when it came up for conversation, it wasn't like half the team was saying, nah, let's just sell these doors and let everybody buy a new door that already bought a kennel. I mean, I guess I'm speaking for you guys, but I never heard conversation that was debating whether or not you should go back and send people doors who had already bought kennels. And I think that's just outrageously awesome customer service.
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything there, but kudos.
Thank you. No, I think it is very important, and there was no questions asked whatsoever when we had that conversation. Nobody was concerned. It was, how are we going to do this and make this the most effective to roll this out? So that was the most important thing. And, I think that it's definitely brought a lot of attention to the market and everything else, and made people appreciate our brand even more.
Yeah. Well, I have tremendous appreciation for the way that y'all have handled that, because you didn't have to do that, number one. I mean, everybody, every company, every person in the industry is in some way, shape, form, or fashion trying to improve their product or improve their presence. And when you improve something, you don't necessarily owe it to everybody to go back and, like, make that same, the current improvement for people that you've done business with in the past. I mean, I didn't have any concerns about my kennels and, the two that I had. And, so I think that's fantastic. And it really does go to speak to the ethos and the culture that you guys have built, around just exceptional customer service and customer satisfaction. And, it's one of the reasons that I really appreciate working with you guys, because we share a lot of retail space together. A lot of the same dealers that I sell duck calls to, you guys sell kennels and spinning wing decoys and the other, you know, ancillary accessories that you guys sell. And, man, you know, you got to run in a pack, and you want to surround yourself with people that think about life and think about business and think about customer service the same way you do, because the reality is, if I'm out there pimping a Lucky Duck spinner and a Lucky Duck kennel, and then somebody has a bad experience with their battery life or their wing or their kennel door or whatever, and you guys don't think about customer service the same way I do, that reflects negatively on me in an end-around way, and vice versa. If I'm not willing to take care of somebody that breaks the insert on their duck call because they dropped it or their dog chewed it, you know, it sort of indirectly makes you guys look bad. And
you know, it's funny how you talk about that, and partnering is everything. And when you connect with the right people, integrity is everything, and how you represent yourself within the community. And it's the things that we always want to make sure that we're having good conversations with everybody, but also that our partners share the same integrity. And that's why I think, you know, Rolling Thunder has become a very strong partner of Lucky Duck, because we share a lot of the same values. And I think that really helps in the retail space and with your customer base.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I appreciate that. It's difficult to find partnerships that can last, and I agree with what you're saying. It has to be built first and foremost upon a shared value system, because if you don't have a shared value system, it doesn't really matter what the synergy created by the partnership is, it won't last, because the value system is the foundation that makes all the rest of the synergy last over time. And you guys have definitely been that for us, and I hope that in a small way we're that for you guys as well. Let's change gears just a little bit. Talk to me about the dealer market and the sales cycle, Ricky, and I want to tee up a couple questions, and then I'll let you have it. I guess really what I want you to describe for everybody is how the sales cycle with the big box stores and the independent dealers, but basically the dealer world works from a sales standpoint, because that's kind of your life. And then, mm-hmm. and then I'd like for you to kind of talk about how Lucky Duck has filled a void there, you know, for those dealers in terms of the kennel market. Go.
Yeah. So, you know, the nice thing about having stuff made here in the United States is that it doesn't spend time on the water, and you don't need that 30-day waiting period for it to get here. But a lot of times, with the pet market stuff, you know, it's a year-round market, obviously. You guys are, I mean, all of us as waterfowl hunters, training dogs, or your dogs are at a trainer right now or whatever. So, people are always buying dogs and dogs are always having puppies. So it's a year-round cycle with that. And it's just really, getting in front of the big box retailers during their time window that they have open. And they all vary throughout the year, as to when they have meetings for pet. But you know, you could just get it in front of them, sit down for an hour, you have a conversation, and the biggest thing about the Lucky Kennel is that, we're the most premium intermediate dog kennel right now, in the retail space. And you know, the best priced, intermediate dog kennel that is 5-star crash test rated. So it's got a lot of great sales features to it. Because of its capability. So as far as the overall life cycle, it is year round. And you know, you present it and get it to whoever you can. And then once they take it, usually within 30 days, they're done with their review. And then they'll, you know, either spit out a forecast, or for independent retailers, we go to buy group shows, which, Spence, you've done those before. Those markets, you know, happen twice a year, usually in February and or around the September markets. We did two markets last year, which allowed us to get into a lot of independent stores, things like that. And then, you know, obviously, dog kennels are a big thing as well. And that's where Luke comes into play at, and is having conversations with a lot of dog kennels out there and dog trainers. So, it's important for those guys to have what they need because they have customers in front of them as well. So, you know, we're willing to work with everybody, that we possibly can to get this kennel in their hands, to ensure that their pets are safe, and we're going to continue to grow the line, with the accessories and covers and pads. And, you know, Brett just came up with a 3,500 pound, you know, ratchet strap system that we had to provide for the Center for Pet Safety. So once these products are developed, you know, you can ensure that we are constantly beating the pavement every day, to talk with dealers and, you know, from big box to retail. But it, you know, being that it is a premium kennel, you know, you're looking for the right customers as well.
Yeah. All right. So I got two questions from what you just said. When you talk about intermediate, you're talking about the size of the kennel, right? So, and is that
correct.
What you mean by intermediate?
And I think correct. And I think the biggest thing to mention out of all this, and when you're thinking about a go-to-market strategy and thinking about retail, one of the things we did is that before we made the kennel, is that we thought about the overall dimension of the kennel, because there's a lot of people that make kennels, but they make them too large, meaning what happens is that when the retailer has it and then they have to ship it, it's not conveyable by UPS or FedEx. So therefore they're hit with a surcharge. So it's not advantageous for them to want to carry your product. So we made that with the retailer in mind, because that's who we are. We're retail people, and we know some of the best marketing comes from our retailers, right? So we made that with in mind. So where when we say the intermediate, you could say for dogs up to 75 pounds, but dogs range in height and size. So, you know, that's a nice thing about dog kennels. There's a lot of places that it's in. You can walk your dog in, try it out. But for the most part, on the intermediate size, while the exterior dimension is smaller, our interior dimension is larger than most intermediates that are out there, believe it or not. So,
okay. It's pretty, all right, perfect.
Pretty cool features.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So the next question is, so, you know, in most parts of the country in August, there's some form of a sale or an outdoor show or a something, you know, whether it be at Rogers or whether it be at Max or everybody. Something's going on in August, it seems like, and whether it's an in-store promotion or a sale or just Bass Pros doing their, you know, their fall classic thing. All right, so if I'm Joe customer and I'm walking into an independent store or a Bass Pro shop, but a sporting goods store at one of these fall sales in August, and I see a Lucky Duck kennel sitting there. When did that Lucky Duck kennel arrive at that retailer's location?
It could have been days before. It could have been days before. It could have been, you know, two months before. You know, when it was this past August, kennels were arriving in June. So as soon as the kennels were manufactured and ready to ship to dealers, they immediately went out to dealers, you know. It was, again, it goes back to that sales cycle of the kennel. So some places may buy two, some places may buy eight, some places might buy, you know, 100. It just depends on the level of the customer and who they service. But, you know, for the most part, there's usually always one or two on display. And that depends on the retailer, if they have a DC or if they don't, you know. You take people like Shields who are just at stores, so you got to ship to all the random stores, but our fill rate's always good. So we always have stock or try to have stock of our kennel. Most recently, believe it or not, right before we launched the five-star part, we actually sold out of them. So it was actually a really good transition, and believe it or not, it wasn't planned to be that.
Well, that's awesome. What I'm trying to get at here is the life cycle that most consumers don't think about. So if they walk into a store in August, that kennel more than likely showed up. It had to show up before that. More than likely it showed up sometime in June or July, right? That's kind of the month that we all deliver stuff to these stores. So at what point in the year did you have the conversation with the person at the store that is the buyer? Most likely.
November.
So
November
so that's
to,
my,
to
that's
January.
Exactly. So that's my point here is the complexity of what Brett has to design and get off the ground and manufactured. You got to know before you go visit your buyer in November, you got to know that you're going to have a product available. It may not be 100% finished, but more than likely, I mean, I know y'all are about like us. It's finished by November. I mean, you've got prototypes and you know exactly what you're going to sell because you're going to have to show it to them, right? But you're not actually, unless y'all are on some kind of a magic money train that I'm not on, you're not actually going to experience any revenue from that transaction that takes place in November until probably 60 days after the kennel arrives on the ground at the store. So if the kennel gets there July 15th, September 15th?
Yes.
At least?
Yes, net 30, net 60, yeah. So that's exactly how it works. So, yeah, the sales cycle is a long cycle, especially from the point of delivery. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
But and so you, know, it's important that they have inventory.
Yeah, so I guess the point I was trying to make end around just because – my customers, every time I talk about this with somebody who's not in the industry, I think we take for granted the things we think about because we basically think a year out, right? We're thinking October, November. We're thinking about the following fall, whereas most of our customers in October and November, they're thinking about where they're going to hunt next weekend. And we're making sales calls for the following year. I guess I'm saying that for an educational piece, but I'm also saying that because from a value system standpoint and when you look for partners, at least us at Rolling Thunder, when we look for partners, we're looking for companies that the value system, when you're talking about something a whole year out, having a shared value system is even that much more important because I need to know that if something changes for y'all between November and August, that y'all share the kind of customer service and value system that's like, you know, we're going to be there. We're going to make that right.
Yeah.
No matter what happens kind of thing. And that's a long time. I mean, that's a year we're talking about. And then you combine with that, like making a product in America and, I can only imagine the complexity in that and then making a product that has enough margin so that the mom and pops and the Rogers and the Max and the, you know, the local independent dealers can make a little bit of money as well. I mean, that's a complicated process and you have to start from somewhere in terms of a value system and a target in order to get at the end of the day to a place that is a quality product that a customer has access to touch and feel before they spend their money on it. and then, you know, that supports the local dealers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when you think about the margin aspect, we truly believe in sharing the margin with our retailers, you know, and being super competitive in how we can get our kennels to them at, you know, with shipping rates. And we think of every possible way we can make it easy for the consumer to get their hands on it. And, you know, with the retail side, we're very proud of that because, you know, and sharing that margin because that means more for the employees and more incentive for the employees to want to sell our stuff. And, you know, it's all about employing people, especially right now where that's very, very tough. And kind of thank goodness for some of this e-commerce side for our retailers because it's allowing them to still have cash flow come through while, you know, some of their stores may be closed. So it's, you're right. It's a challenge. It's a longer cycle. But what it does is gives us time to ensure quality and continue to test stuff. But you know, people, like to your point, people are thinking about stuff in season, October to December, but don't get frustrated with companies if they run out of inventory in January or February because it's what was forecast and they might have sold through it already. So I know a lot of people get frustrated when they go back at the end of January, like, man, they don't have these in stock or whatever. And well, it's the end of the season. We're not going to order more because, again, to your point, Spencer, you have to carry that inventory for 6 or 7 months. You know, that's a lot of overhead.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Especially the reorders that you're talking about around Christmas and January, because it's one thing to get everybody on board with a big front end order, an order that you think is going to project you, you know, 80% of the way through the waterfowl season. But if you create a great product and it sells fast in November, they're going to want more of it before Christmas. And the onus is then on the manufacturer. You're betting on what you think is going to happen. And so if they want more of it, the only way you can sell more of them is if you've got it. So, I mean, it's big boy gambling for sure. I guess the last thing that I just wanted to say is, I'll let you guys say anything you wanted to say, but the last thing I wanted to say about the dealers is just that I think it's really easy for a customer, and probably for most of the people that are listening to this, to think about the Max Prairie Wings, the Rogers, the Presleys, I'm going to leave somebody out, but, you know, the Binks, even the Bass Pros and the Cabela's and the Shields. It's easy to think about those places as being sort of invincible, almost like the Yankees, you know, giant retailers, and think of them as making tons of money. But, man, you know, when I think about Max and when I think about Rogers, let's just take those two examples. I guarantee you that my thoughts about those places are the same as y'all's thoughts. I think about the people that make those things up, because when we go visit those places, when they have their sales in August, I mean, they feed us, right? I mean, like when we were at Rogers last fall, we're having barbecue with the whole family and the kids and the little kids, you know, and same at Max, you know, they're, Marion's throwing a party at the convention center there and feeding everybody and a band and just kind of so I'm saying all that to just say that, I think when you see the back end side of the industry level, the dealer level stuff, it has totally changed the way that I think about the outdoor world and ordering stuff online. And I'm not fussing anybody for ordering stuff online, but I mean, there's real people that depend on us delivering a quality product so that they can make a living. And so selling stuff at a dealer level is not just as simple as, oh, well, we can put it on 1,000 shelves so we can make more money. It's a collective, it's a team effort, you know, just like how we develop products.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a lot harder to sell to dealers and retailers because they only have so much money, right? It's a competitive environment and you're pitching against it, against a lot of different things or things that may be in the same market or premium products. It's always hard for somebody to, you know, want to spend a little bit more, and there has to be that value add. And, you know, there's a marketing play in there too, you know, to make sure that it's visible to their customer and it pops off on the shelf versus just, you know, building a website and making sure that the SEOs are good and building influencers and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into it, but to your point, you know, there's something to be said about this retail network. And as we shift is how we buy our goods and, you know, wanting things, you know, immediate and all that kind of stuff. You know, I've had the opportunity to build a lot of personal relationships with these buyers. And, you know, from the corporate levels that you talked about, you know, the big chains, mm-hmm. even down to the little guy. Right now, yeah. they're all hurting in one way or another, right? And we always talk about right now in this situation, make sure you eat out once a week or twice a week. Try to still support your local and get the carry out and all that kind of stuff. Well, think about that from a hunting and fishing standpoint, too, because those yep. employees can't go to work in the store, so they're laid off, right? Or yep. on the corporate side, some of the stores can't operate in certain states, so those stores are shut down. And those senior leaders or people that are salaried employees have taken a reduction in pay so that the hourly employees can still stay on payroll. You know, it's not about just jumping on unemployment. So we all feed into this cycle as consumers and where we go and have these relationships. And you're absolutely right. When I think about selling to a customer, I think about how that's going to affect every employee that they have and how it's going to make their company better. So it's, you know, it comes full circle.
Yeah. It's crazy how it's all intertwined and interconnected. You know, what's good for you is good for me. And as long as we kind of keep that sort of team mentality that we're all in it together, I mean, it continues to work. And, it doesn't do me any good to sell a whole bunch of duck calls to somebody that's not going to be able to push those duck calls through to customers. You know, I need to have a happy customer that has a good experience and buys a call in the store so that the store can reorder, because that not only is that a customer who's happy with their hunting experience, that's a store owner and a store employee who gets to put food on their table. And that's me as a manufacturer, and same cycle for y'all. It's all very, very interconnected. And I appreciate you making that point, because, with Amazon and all of the simplicity of online shopping and how we've all gotten to be good at it, it's easy to forget that stopping into your local sporting goods store and paying an extra $2 for a case of shotgun shells or you know, whatever you need, instead of just using them as your dressing room to try on various sizes of the new clothing or whatever it is, and then order them online. Like, ordering from them actually really does help real people put real food on their tables. I guess, go ahead. Did you want to say something else?
No, you're right. You know, you're absolutely right, Spencer. And regardless of the size of the company, somebody still has to go to their family every night, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. I guess the last thing I just wanted to tee up for you guys is, like, what's next for Lucky Duck? What's on the horizon for you guys? What's 2020 and 2021 kind of look like? Can you tease anything?
I think that you're going to find us, Brett and myself and the Lucky Duck team, dipping into some traditional ways of doing things that we may have hunted previously with our parents and things like that. You're going to see some throwback stuff that maybe brings a new twist to hunting. But then we've got some great things for this fall with our agitator. That's going to be, in every market. That's going to be that duck butt that, pumps and moves along the top of the water. That's going to be a huge deal for that. We got a lot of retailers on board for that. And more stuff to come around the kennel. Like I said, you know, covers and fans and things like that. Normally we're pretty tight-lipped when we come out with certain stuff, but I think that when people buy a kennel or are thinking about kennels and they hear us on this podcast right now and they're thinking about buying a kennel, yes, we are going to come out with those things that are going to support your everyday needs in surrounding that kennel and going to train your dog or transporting your pet to wherever you go. So, there's a lot of big things, and we really haven't stopped moving. In despite of everything that's going on right now, we are still pushing hard forward, and everything's going really well for us.
Yeah. Awesome. Brett, what are you doing these days, and what's the next few months for you look like?
I try to get out and turkey hunt every once in a while, but this is actually my busy time. So, You know, right now I'm staring at my computer screen, looking at some drawings that I'm working on, and just dealing. We're starting to do some production stuff, so just making sure that's going smooth and brainstorming and keeping notes. If there's other ideas to work on yet, and just keep chugging along. So just keep things
good,
new and fresh. And so, but yeah, it's just, this is my busy time. So this is, you don't see me in the turkey woods very often. Ricky called me the other day. He says, make sure you get out. And, I went scouting this morning with the kids, and we didn't have much success. We saw one hen, but so I've tried to get out a couple times yet, but I got to take care of business first, and that's the most important. So
they're harder to kill down here, or up here, I should say, than down in Middle Tennessee. We don't have them. They're not
right.
Like fleas up here. Yeah, they actually have to survive winters up here.
Yeah, I got you. Well, I'm not in Middle Tennessee. I'm in West Tennessee on the Big River. So I wish that I was in Middle Tennessee as well. I wish I was in Middle Tennessee for turkey numbers. We don't have nearly what they have in Middle Tennessee. Okay, two more things, and then we'll wrap it up. One is, both of you have you both made arrangements for the first weekend in June? And are you practicing your golf swing for the Rolling Thunder Golf Scramble?
Dude, that's a shoe-in. That shouldn't even be a conversation. You're talking
okay,
to the
good.
Winning team right now.
Well, I was just asking because I needed to, it's important that second place show up. And I don't need you guys bailing out because of coronavirus or anything else.
You didn't get a tricky swing at Top Golf, so.
Yeah, man, I didn't even have my clubs. I didn't even have my clubs on me, so it's not even fair. I got those specially custom fitted, but I'm your John Daly, man. I like to go out and have a good time, so I'll definitely do that.
Okay, good, good. All right, last question.
Chris,
and go ahead.
I was just gonna say, just make sure there's plenty of beer. All right.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be a problem. All right, last question, and I may very well regret asking this question, but my mouth has gotten me in trouble a lot in my lifetime, and so I'm just gonna go with what has I don't know. I'm gonna ask you because I want to know. What about this picture that Gunnar posted of you, Brett? What? Give me the story on that.
Several years ago, 5 years ago, I guess it was, I did some, just as a freelance photographer, I did some work for Gunnar Kennels and, wrote a review. They make a great product. And I used their kennel exclusively, up until I got hired by Lucky Duck. And going into Lucky Duck, I had no clue that I was going to be designing the kennel. Not a clue. It wasn't like I went to Lucky Duck with a design idea. It was just on the task list that I was presented. So, I don't know, man. I just,
So you're telling me they posted that picture just busting your chops, I guess?
I guess. I guess.
Okay.
Good.
Well, maybe. But yeah, maybe one day R&T will post a picture of me blowing a short barrel. Because there is actually, just in fairness to everybody, there is actually an episode of Lee and Tiff's television show where they're hunting on the Cache River with me, and I have a BSOD original on my lanyard and a Rich and Tone short barrel.
You mean to tell me you weren't the first one that invented the duck call, Spencer?
I'm not. You would hear it, to just rag on some of my peers in the duck call business for just a minute. Some of them think that they invented the duck call, for sure. And so, especially if you can go on Call Nuts or Duck Call Exchange or one of them and ask a question about cut downs. And, like one of my buddies said one time, I'm pretty sure cutting an olt is harder than doing, open heart surgery because there's a hell of a lot more qualified cardiac surgeons than hire people to cut an old. All good. Well, look, I really appreciate y'all's time. Thanks for the information that you provided and for just being on the show. Thanks for being good guys, and can't wait to see y'all in the greater metropolitan area of Somerville first weekend in June. Congratulations on second place.
Thank you, Spencer. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, Spencer, thanks for the support. And just make sure when you make that trophy, just go ahead and put it Lucky Duck on there right now. So.
All right, sounds good. Well, listen, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Rolling Thunder Podcast. Ricky Hart and Brett Ayers of Lucky Duck Premium Decoys have been my guest, and just appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to the end. If you don't mind, hit the subscribe button and leave us a review. Preferably only good reviews, but if you feel the need to put a bad review out there, I guess that's okay too. We want you to be honest, but appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you supporting Rolling Thunder and Lucky Duck and all the other brands that that help us keep putting food on our table and raising our families. So we will catch up with you next time. See you later.